Worrier. She was concerned about him walking to school when he started kindergarten. So she walked him to school for a couple of days, but when he came home one day and he told his mom, he didn't want her to walk him to school anymore. He wanted to be like the big boys, and he protested loudly, so she had an idea about how to handle it. She asked her neighbor, Mrs. Goodnest, if she would follow her son to school at a distance behind him that he would so he wouldn't notice, but close enough to keep a watch on him. Mrs. Goodnest said that was a great idea because she had this toddler and they needed to get up and get some exercise anyway. So she agreed to do it. The next day after school, Mrs. Goodnest and her little girl Marcy set out following behind Timmy as he walked to school with another neighbor boy. She did this for a whole week, and as the boys walked and chatted, kicking stones and twigs, the little friend of Timmy noticed that the same lady was following them as she seemed to do every day, all week long. Finally, Timmy said, "Have you ever noticed that lady following us all week? Do you know her?" Timmy just was nonchalant. "Yeah, I know her. I know who she is." And the little friend said, "Well, who is she?" "Well, that's Shirley Goodnest." Timmy said, "Shirley Goodnest? Who the heck is she and why is she following us?" "Well," Timmy replied, "every night my mom makes me say the 23rd Psalm with my prayers because she worries about me so much. And in that psalm it says, 'Shirley Goodnest and Marcy shall follow me all the days of my life, so I guess I have to get used to it.'" And I love that story because I have a picture in my mind that goodness and mercy follow me all the days of my life. A real thing that follows me all the days of my life. My husband and I have this little thing when we go someplace and he has to park and there's a parking spot up front. He says it's because I'm with him. Because Shirley Goodnest and Marcy follow me all the days of my life. And so now we say that to each other, you know, instead of saying it the other way. I'm going to be real quick with this because I know we're a little short on time. But when I read this a while ago, it says May 26th, but I actually didn't read it then because you know how you are about getting things off your computer. But I thought that this was for your group because one of the things I felt like the Lord wanted you to know and do is to be still and know that He is God. So this is says, "My soul wait in silence for God only, for my hope is from Him." Psalm 62:5. "When gold is refined over extreme heat, the first thing to come to the top is the dross. The last thing to be separated from it is the silver, a less precious metal that often blends in with the raw gold ore." What a picture. Most of us are unable to separate the good from the best. So Malachi writes, "He will purify and refine them like gold. He does it because we don't know how." Personal failure is usually the result of a slow, steady buildup rather than a single act. It happens when we focus on our career and neglect our character. So God calls us to the place of solitude, a place with no distractions, in order to probe our deepest thoughts and open our eyes to certain issues that need our attention. It's right here that He makes us aware of the things that we try to hide from others. There is no way to have a deeper, more intimate relationship with God without the rarest of all disciplines, absolute solitude. Think I'm sounding like a mystic? Will you just listen? Psalms 46:10, "Be still and know that I am God." It's here that the junk we've collected during the busy hours of our day gets filtered out. With the debris out of the way, we're able to see things more clearly and feel God's nudgings more sensitively. Rearrange your schedule. Make time to be alone with God. And I know that there must be somebody here that needs to be reminded of that. When I'm in the counseling office, I use that example often about the gallon glass jar, and if I had time, I would have done it. You put the big rocks in first. You put the stone in first, then the little things fit in around it, and when you think it's so full you can't get anything else, then you can get the sand in. But if you don't put that big rock in first, everything else is not going to fit. And in my opinion, the big rock is that solitude, that time alone with God every single day. I'm telling you, even 5 minutes, God will honor that your desire to be obedient and spend time with Him. Yes, I will try. Last night after I finished speaking, of course I could have beat myself up and gone over every word that I said to you and thought, oh, I shouldn't have said that and I shouldn't have said this. But you know what? I didn't do it. And I went to sleep and I slept peacefully and soundly, which I don't always do, but I slept really, really well. And then this morning when I got up, the Lord had my Bible marked at this spot. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. For as the rain and the snow come down from heaven and do not return there without watering the earth and making it bear and sprout and furnishing seed to the sower and bread to the eater, so shall my word be which goes forth from my mouth. It shall not return to me empty, without accomplishing what I desire and without succeeding in the matter for which I sent it. And that was such an encouragement to me. I did give you the word, and I know that God promises that it won't, that it will bear fruit. And my prayer is that any words that were my words, any words that were of my flesh, there'll be a crop failure. That's my prayer. I pray that in the lives of my children and in the lives of people that I have contact with, if I say or do anything that is apart from what God wanted you to hear, that that will not even penetrate your brain, that it will not be there in any way whatsoever. So I felt so encouraged by that. See, God's still at work in my life today, and I needed that. I needed that. What we're going to talk about today is how to restore relationships through circles of responsibility, but it also has another title, how to regain personal power. Doesn't that sound good? Wouldn't we like to do that? There is nothing that can make us feel more helpless than a conflict in a relationship with our children, with our spouses, with the people we work with the people in church, parents. Nothing makes us feel more helpless. And one of the questions that we get asked in the office is, what can I do? People come and they're just so helpless. What can I do? And why do they ask that question? Well, because what they've been doing hasn't been working. Or they wouldn't be asking us. Because if it's working, you don't ask that question. Or even if you think it's working, you don't ask that question. In Proverbs 14:12, it says, there's a way which seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. Death could be separation, spiritual, physical, relational. It could mean any number of things. But there are four things that you can do to either restore a relationship or bring peace to yourself in a relationship that's irreconcilable. And we know that there are going to be some of those relationships. I have some in my life, and that's one of the hardest things I've had to deal with, because if I'm a Christian, I should not have broken relationships. I should be able to fix that. I should be able to make that right. Surely with a little more effort, I can do it. And that has been one of the hardest things for me to learn, is to let that go and let God take care of it. In 2 Timothy 3:1, it says, but realize this, that in the last days, difficult times will come, unloving and unreconcilable. Those are some of the words that are in there. So those things are going to happen. So the first thing that you need to do to begin to deal with conflict, is identify. Honestly identify what's happening in the relationship. And why is that important? Because God only gives grace for the truth. So if you're not honestly identifying what's going on in this relationship, you're not going to get any place. You got to start somewhere. John 1:14 says, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, full of grace and truth. God never, ever gives grace for denial. The definition of Christian denial is denying God access to a hurt that He wants to heal for your benefit and His glory. And when we wear these masks, we're playing the denial game. And as long as we keep it on, nothing's going to happen, because we have to admit that there's a problem and allow God in. But as long as we're denying it, we're denying Him access to that pain that He wants to look at. I think turns up the heat just a little bit. Turns up the heat just a little bit. Till you finally have to take that mask off and say, I can't do this. I need help. I've got to know another way of doing this. And that's when you come to see us or a good Christian friend, which is just as good as far as I'm concerned. Matthew 5:16 says, let your light shine, or your life shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Then there are at least four reasons why we don't want to look at the truth that's in our own lives or in our broken relationships. And I'm going to tell you what the truths are, and then I'll go back and elaborate on them just a little bit. Four reasons that we as believers may not want to look at the truth of ourselves or our relationships. There may be a reality that we don't want to acknowledge. There may be feelings that we don't want to feel or re-feel. These historical events. There may be a responsibility that I don't want to assume. There may be a motive in my heart that I don't want to acknowledge. So the four reasons, a reality that I don't want to acknowledge, I didn't really want to examine the relationship that was going on with my husband. He had an affair, and I didn't want to look at it, because if I looked at it, I might find failures on my part that I didn't want to deal with. And so that would be a reality that I didn't want to acknowledge. Or a child that comes home and you smell alcohol on their breath, and you just pretend it's not there, because if I don't pretend it's not there, I'm going to have to deal with that. That's a reality that I don't want to acknowledge. Or maybe I'm not walking with God, and I don't want to get too close because I don't want to have to look at that. I don't want to get too close to people. Or then the second one is feelings that we don't want to re-feel, and this is a big one. It's what we talked about last night. The feeling that I'm not wanted, or that I'm not loved or lovable, or I can't do anything right, or just emotional pain. That would be another reason you wouldn't look at your relationships. And then the big lie, and I hear this in the office a lot. I hear it from one of my best friends. You can experience or feel such a high level of pain that God is unable to comfort you in it. So I'm not going there, because God couldn't do it. It says in 2 Corinthians 1, 3b through 4, "And the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our afflictions, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with a comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God." And I have a friend who is in a lot of pain a lot of the time. And what we just talked about this on Tuesday, and she doesn't want to deal with these issues. And I said, "But sweetie, you're already in pain. You're in pain every day. Let's deal with it so you can be out of that everyday pain." And she went to the Lord. We prayed, and then she went to the Lord, and she realized she's angry at God. And she prayed about that, and then she's one of the girls that was here last night, and she was just so relaxed, and she was just at peace, and she said, "I've just had such joy." But she was so afraid to look at the pain that she was in pain because she wasn't willing to look at it. And then the third thing was a responsibility that I don't want to assume. Maybe I'm going to have to forgive somebody. You know what? I want revenge most of the time, but that's God's circle. So maybe it's a responsibility that I don't want to look. Maybe I failed to love. There's a book that's out that's called From Bondage to Bonding, and it's about codependency, and she talks about failure to love. And I look at the places in my life where I have failed to love, and so I maybe don't want to look there. A responsibility that I may have to take. And even though my husband's failure was like almost 13 years ago, even this year, I had to go to him and say, "I am so sorry. I failed to love you. I didn't want to be responsible. But I was responsible not for what he did. I was responsible for my part." And it was healing to him, I hope and I believe, when I went to him and said, "I really did fail to love you." When I read that book, it just opened my eyes to my failure to love. And then sometimes it could be a responsibility I don't want to assume. Maybe I don't want to do restitution. Maybe there's some things I have to do to go back and make it right. Issues or people that I may have to confront. I had to do some things like that with my mom, and I didn't want to do it. So for years, I just kept pushing it back. Or maybe a change that I have to make. The example I have written down here is with my mom, who was, I feel like, was emotionally and verbally abusive to me. And until I was willing to say, I love you, Mom, but I just can't let you talk to me like that anymore. I knew that there would probably be a break in that relationship. So that was, I didn't want to go there with her. But I couldn't keep doing things the way I'd been doing them. It's like an illustration that we use is like she had cancer, and I kept taking the chemo. She didn't get well, and I got sick. And I had to stop taking the chemo. I had to stop swallowing that stuff because I was getting sick and she wasn't getting well. I'm not getting sick anymore, and I'm still praying that she's going to get better because of it, that our relationship will blossom. And then the fourth thing was a motive of your heart that you don't want to acknowledge. Selfishness. Yuck. Who wants to think about that? Enablers are classic examples of selfishness. Ugh, I don't like that one. Enablers never do for other people, for their benefit. I do that for my benefit. when I'm enabling them, it's keeping me from feeling something that I don't want to feel. And so selfishness might be one. Classic blame shifters to avoid responsibility. It's always somebody else's fault. I have a friend, and I've changed the names, but I have a friend who's, you know, just always pointing her finger, and she's so angry, and every time she is explosive, you know, well, if he hadn't done this, or if this hadn't happened, it wouldn't happen. And so she's a classic blame shifter. But then the next step is that you need to take an honest x-ray of your relationship. You list where you're at, what's going on, what's happened, or what is happening. We call that the A-list. At, where are you at? And then the B list, where would you like to be? And this is not for the purpose of blaming or shaming anyone. It's just information. It's just fact finding. And you might sit down with the person that you're having conflict with, or if you can't do that, at least do it with yourself. The person you're having conflict with, what's going on here? Well, there's anger, and I'm hurt, or I feel rejected, or withdrawn, or fearful. Well, what if that's where you're at, where would you like to be? Well, I'd like to be able to forgive and be healed and accepted and be more outgoing instead of withdrawn and more peaceful instead of fearful. So you just decide where you're at and where you want to be and separate some of those things out. But don't assign anything. Just figure out where you're at and where you want to be. And then the reason that you do that is because it's like taking an x-ray of this conflict or this relationship. And you can't do anything until you have a really good, healthy x-ray. Just like a doctor, you wouldn't go to the doctor and let him fix something that's wrong with your arm unless he did an x-ray first. And if you take this relationship x-ray and you can't agree on what's going on, then you're not really going to be able to move, you're not going to be able to move forward. And there's something that you can do about that too, and we'll talk about that when we get to this part over here. I hope I'm making sense. I'm really trying to hurry.
I'm not going to do that in part.
Okay, so if you take this relationship x-ray and there's no agreement about where you're at and where you want to be, just back up a little bit. Pray about it. Ask God to give you more wisdom. Ask God to give the other person more wisdom and begin to sort it out. Because if you don't get a good x-ray, you can't put a cast on the arm, right? You don't know the next direction to take in resolving this conflict. Then once you have the next thing that we do, we've identified, okay? Then once we've identified, the next thing we're going to do is we're going to assign. Assign responsibility for the parts of the conflict. And what we do in the office is we just draw a circle. You just draw a circle for each person who's involved in the conflict. Here I am, this is the wife, and we'll say here, this is my husband. You just draw a circle, and you begin to take these things that are in this list that you made, and you begin to assign who do they belong to. You know, there's a lot of yelling on my A list. This is what's going on. Okay, who's doing the yelling? Me. So, yelling goes in my circle. Okay? There's a lot of avoiding going on in our relationship. Who's doing that? Well, my husband, because he leaves every time something comes up. He's like, I'm out of here. So you begin to assign the things that belong to people. It's still not for the purpose of blaming or shaming anybody. You're just trying to identify what's going on so that you know what you're dealing with to take care of it. So you draw a circle for each person. And the reason for that is in Romans 12:18, it says, if possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. That's what we're working toward. And then in Romans 14, I'm going to read it out of here. I didn't write it all down because it was so much. Romans 14, verses 1 through 12. Accept Christians who are weak in faith and don't argue with them about what they think is right or wrong. For instance, one person believes it's all right to eat anything, but another believer who has a sensitive conscience will eat only vegetables. Those who think it is all right to eat anything must not look down on those who won't, and those who won't eat certain foods must not condemn those who do, for God has accepted them. Who are you to condemn God's servants? They're responsible to the Lord, so let him tell them whether they are right or wrong. The Lord's power will help them do as they should. In the same way, some think one day is more holy than another, while others think every day is alike. Each person should have a personal conviction about this matter. Those who have a special day for worshiping the Lord are trying to honor Him, and those who eat all kinds of food do so to honor the Lord, since they give thanks to God before eating. And those who won't eat everything also want to please the Lord and give thanks to God. For we are not our own masters when we live or when we die. While we live to please the Lord, and when we die, we go to be with the Lord. So in life and in death, we belong to the Lord. Christ died and rose again for this very purpose, so that He might be Lord of those who are alive and of those who have died. So why do you condemn another Christian? Why do you look down on another Christian? Remember, each of us will stand personally before the judgment seat of God. For the Scripture says, "As surely as I live, says the Lord, every knee will bow to me, and every tongue will confess allegiance to God." So in our circles, God is even saying, you're going to be responsible for your own stuff. You're not going to be responsible for anybody else's, just your own. And that, to me, was very freeing. And then there are two things when you're assigning responsibility that you want to avoid, and that would be blame shifting responsibility to avoid responsibility. I am 100% responsible for my part. If you drew a circle and you said, what percentage of the problem that's going on in your life belongs to you? And maybe my percentage is only 25%. I am 100% responsible for my 25%. And there shouldn't be any blame shifting for that responsibility. I can't make my husband be responsible for his part. All I can do is stay in my circle and be responsible for my part. John 21:21-22 says, Peter therefore, seeing him, John, said to Jesus, Lord, what about this man? And Jesus said to Peter, if I want John to remain until I come, what is that to you? Jesus is saying, stay in your own circle. I hear that phrase in my head all the time. Sheila, what is that to you? It is none of your beeswax, girlfriend. And then he says, you follow me. That's in my circle. It's not any of my business what God is doing in your circle. And then I thought this was so great. In Genesis 3, verses 12 and 13, if you guys ever, well, of course, maybe you don't play with these words like I do, but the very first example of blame shifting, the very first one, and you already know what it is, and you know what's so shocking about it is that 12 and 13, it says, and the man said, because God had asked him, who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten from the tree of which I commanded you not to eat? And the man said, well, that woman that you gave me to be with me, she gave me the fruit. And then the Lord said to the woman, what is this that you've done? And the woman said, the serpent deceived me and I ate it. The very first blame shifting is that man blamed God. You gave me this woman. She gave me the fruit. This is your fault, God. How many times do we get mad at God? Say, you let this happen to me. And the truth is, he had some responsibility there, didn't he? So I love that. The very first blame shifting was Adam blaming God. And then the second thing you want to avoid, that's blame shifting to avoid my own responsibility. But you also want to avoid blaming, taking blame that doesn't belong to you, to gain acceptance or to make peace. Was it you that said you were a peacemaker? Yeah. You want to avoid taking blame. And one of the things I was sharing with Linda this morning, when that situation happened with my husband, I really wanted to, at the beginning, I really, really wanted it to be my fault. Because if it was my fault, then I could be responsible and I could fix it. I could move over into the God circle. I could take care of it. And I tried really hard because that was my pattern, to be responsible for everybody's stuff. I'm responsible for my mom to be happy. She's not happy, that has to be my fault. Well, then I can fix it. And I could work really hard, be the perfect daughter, put on the lovely little mask, and I could fix what was going on with my mom. Or if my kids were unhappy or if my friend was unhappy. I can remember one time being beside the bed of a friend who was miserable, and I just knew that I could help her. I just knew that I could fix that and make that be all better. I stayed literally on my knees beside her bed for so long that for days I couldn't walk because it hurt my back, you know. But man, I could do it. I could do it. Now, I'm not saying assisting my friend wasn't a good thing, but that's not what I was doing. I was being God. I was trying to make her be better. I was trying to fix it. And the one thing that through that whole relationship crisis that my husband and I had, I kept hearing the Lord say to me, Sheila, you didn't break this, and you can't fix it. And I wanted so much, and that was part of God teaching me, you have to let things go, and they're not in your circle, because I had taken care of everybody for so long, trying to make everything be all right, trying to have peace. I'm taking the blame, and then other people are not picking up their responsibilities. You know what I've learned? If you'll pick it up, they'll let you. They'll totally let you. Especially kids and especially husbands. If I'll pay the bills and mow the lawn and buy the groceries and cook the meals and, you know, if I'll do it, he'll let me. But if I step back, he steps up most of the time. Because, you know, it's really taking his power away from him too, is what I'm doing. So you don't, those are two things you want to avoid. Okay, then the third thing, after you have identified and assigned, you want to assume. Assume responsibility that is legitimately yours. And assigning and assuming are two different things. You might think that once it's assigned and we all know what belongs to us, well then we're done. But it's not enough to just know. You have to be able to assume the responsibility. And but only assume what's in your circle. And Joshua 24:15, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Respectfully reject what is not yours. My illustration for this is I had a boss who I know she was shamed. I know that. I understand. It really helps me to know that because I don't take it personally. But then she wanted me to do something that was totally out of my circle of responsibility. We had a day where we're doing parent-teacher conferences, and the way they had it set up is that I was the teacher, of course, and I had conferences all day long. So that meant someone had to sub in my room. And she came to me one day and said that I had to work on a day that was not my day. And because, well, if you da da da, if you want to do this or this or this, then you have to do that. And I looked at her, and I thought to myself, wait a minute, I don't think that's in my circle. And I thought, really, it's your responsibility to find someone. You're the one who set this up. And actually, it was on a day when I was supposed to be up at the office, at Dr. Lynch's office, and I said to her, I'm not sure I could do that. I didn't just openly, you know, but I said, I'm not sure I can do that because that's one of my days that I'm supposed to be at the office. And later I realized that she had really used shame to try and get me to do what she wanted to do. And I was really happy when I realized that it didn't work. Because before I would have like, oh, really? Okay, I guess I really should do that. I know that that would be what I should do. But the truth is, it really wasn't in my circle. And I watched her, you know, do that with other people. And I don't say that in any kind of condemning way. I understand that she's doing what was done to her. And that's how people get her to do things, so then that's how she knows to do things. But I'm learning that doesn't have to come in. I don't have to let someone manipulate me that way. So respectfully reject what doesn't belong to you. Here's an opposite illustration. Shame on me. My daughter, I have a 26-year-old daughter, beautiful, blonde, gorgeous. And Christmas was always hard for me because of my growing up years. I don't know if you, when you're in an abusive family, holidays are horrible. absolutely horrible. And I'd been married for a long time. My oldest son was already gone. My daughter was living on her own. So, I mean, this is just a few years ago. And I hadn't lived at home forever, but I still would go through this emotional turmoil when the holidays would come. And what I identified is that I believed the lie that I ruined every holiday. But what what I had given it. That was the meaning I gave it. What really happened is that my dad, we would fight. There would be these huge battles over every holiday. There'd be a big blow up, and then the meaning that I gave to that, I took that on myself. And went into my family. Every holiday is ruined was really what was happening. But I assigned that it must be my fault. And so then I took that into my life with my children. So there was this tension that would be in me. And this, the last time that this happened, it was, I had wanted to spend some time with my brother, a bunch of things had happened, didn't get to do it. I was so tense. And just like I say, biting the heads off of snakes. I was just mean. And my daughter was there, and I was just miserable, and I was making everybody around me miserable. And the next day I said to her, I'm so sorry. Because I wanted her to know that wasn't about her. And I said, I'm so sorry. And she looked at me and she said, Mom, I looked at you and I thought to myself, I must be the worst daughter in the whole world. My mom is so miserable. And then she said, I looked at Dad. Dad wasn't miserable. I looked back at you and I thought, this must be Mom's deal. And she said, I went on and enjoyed my Christmas. I started crying because I thought she's been learning from the things that we've been going through. She did not pick up my stuff. Isn't that cool? She did not pick up my stuff. And I was so thankful. I started crying. I said, oh, Stephanie, I'm so proud of you. Because if that was my mom, I can tell you, I would have picked up that stuff and I would have been right in there with her being just as miserable as could be. And that was a turning point in my life. Because I have not had another Christmas. I said, Satan, you've been stealing my Christmases. You've been stealing my holidays way too long. This lie is not going to operate in my life anymore. And it's done. And it's amazing how peaceful that is. But assuming responsibility means just assuming what's in your own circle, not that codependent. And remember, God only gives us grace for our own circle as a general rule. And we'll see that a little bit later in the illustration that we're going to do. Also, do not assume what is in God's circle. That was huge for me. I don't know about you guys, but I didn't even think about God having a circle. I just never even dawned on me. And I have the four things down here on the floor that that are God's circle. In God's circle, it's His business to convict. I am not the Holy Spirit. The only thing I can accomplish is shame. I said it's God's job to convict. I am not the Holy Spirit. All I can accomplish is shame. If I want to get someone to do what I want them to do, and it's not in my circle, then they'll end up feeling shamed. Because that's what was done to me. And I don't say that in a condemning way. I'm telling you, that's all we knew. That's all we knew. So conviction is in God's circle. Change is also in God's circle. My job is to love. God's job is to change. And that one is one I have to apply a lot. My son and his wife and my two grandsons live in Tampa, and they're in a situation where they've been separated for over a year and a half, and they're probably going to be divorced. And I try to go down there every 3 months and spend time with my grandsons, and there's always a lot of emotion that goes over me before I go. A little fear, a little uncertainty, because it's a real unsafe environment. Reminds me too much of my childhood. God has really used it to clear some of those things up. And one of the things that He just impresses on me before I go, Sheila, it is not your job to change anything. You just go down there and you love them. You just love the socks off of them. And you let me deal with the stuff. And it just frees me up to go down there, because I don't have to give advice. I don't have to criticize the way they're parenting. I don't have to do any of those things. It's not my job to change. It's only my job to love them. I think that was Ruth Graham that said that. It was in one of her books about the prodigal son, if you've never read that. That's one of her things, is it's not our job to change him. It's our job to love him. So change is in God's circle. And then control. The ninth fruit of the Spirit is self-control. not people control. I can influence, but I cannot control. Because control is not about faith, it's about fear. When you are trying to control someone, it's not because you're doing it in faith. You're doing it out of fear. Look at that fear. What is it that you're afraid of? Go back and find that historical event. Undo that lie. And then the fourth thing that's in God's circle is He's the one who gives wisdom. And you know, He gives it liberally, and it's a promise that if you need it and you ask for it, He'll give it to you. And it's one of those things that when someone comes into the office to see me, you know, after a while it may sound like I'm kind of praying the same prayer, but the truth is it's what I believe. If He doesn't give us wisdom, if He doesn't shine His light, if He doesn't do the work, it's not going to happen. It is totally not going to happen. And so these are the things that you're going to need to know, that some things are in God's circle, and that really helps you when you're assigning and identifying, because, you know, you're sorting all this stuff out. Some things don't, it belongs in God's circle. Put it over there where it needs to be. It's really important. And then resist assuming others' responsibility. Sometimes we do it, actually we do it always to protect ourselves. When we pick up someone else's responsibility, mostly we're doing it to protect ourselves. When we do it to make peace, how many times have I gone in and done my kids' jobs when they were at home rather than just deal with them, rather than just train them right or, you know, have the fight, I'll just do it. I've heard my husband say it so many times. He does all the dishes at our house, and he always has, and I had three children. I would get so mad at him sometimes. We'd take a walk, and I'd say, why do you do that? Why do you do that? Well, it's just easier. It's just easier. You know, he's assuming a responsibility that doesn't belong to him, not doing the kids any favor. I might assume another's responsibility to avoid feeling guilty. My daughter just ran up a really huge cell phone bill. And I could, I could pay that so that I don't have to feel bad about that. But I just had to say, you know, that's not in my circle. She knew what she was doing when she did it, and she's going to have to pay it. And then we could do it to maintain childish perspective. I'm not responsible. She made me do it, you know, that kind of a thing. To gain acceptance. If I do this for her, then she'll like me or... But that's not really, that's just manipulation. We might resist assuming others' responsibilities to avoid rejection. Or we need to resist that. We might do it, though, to avoid rejection or to please or to fix. And then the last one is, once we've identified, assigned, and assumed, we have to fulfill your own circle of responsibility. And here's the heart of your power. None of these, the first three things don't work without fulfilling your circle of responsibility if you don't fulfill. And here is where you restore the power and control to your life. And you might say, well, how? By fulfilling my own circle of responsibility, how does that fulfill? And it says, when you focus and fulfill your own circle of responsibility, this is God's place of blessing. In James 1:25, it says, but one who looks intently at the perfect law and abides by it, not having become a fearful hearer, but an effectual doer or fulfiller, this man shall be blessed in what he does. In James 1:22, prove yourselves doers of the word and not merely hearers who delude themselves. And there are some benefits to being a doer, a fulfiller of your own circle of responsibility. I'm going to read Matthew. Actually, that's what Psalms 37. If you're not familiar with that, it's the one that starts out. It says, "Do not fret because of evildoers. Be not envious toward wrongdoers. They'll wither like the grass and fade like the green herb. Trust in the Lord, that's in your circle, and do good, that's in your circle. Dwell in the land and cultivate faithfulness in God's circle. The reward for that is that He will give you the desires of your heart." He'll make your righteousness shine like the noonday sun. So look at that, and you'll see what's in your circle and what is the benefit of doing that, fulfilling your circle of responsibility. It's huge. If you see, I'll show you. In my Bible, Psalms And I led a Bible study one time, and we memorized these first 11 verses. Can you see this? Do you think God has spoken to me through Psalms 37? You can't see the print for all the stuff that God has shown me. Clear back to 1988, he's been dealing with me in this. So go back and look. He says that we're supposed to rest and wait patiently for him. Don't fret because of him who prospers in his ways. We're supposed to cease from anger and forsake wrath. Those things only lead to evil doing. And there are things that are so promised to you. If you memorize those first 11 verses, you'll be surprised at how much God will use that in your life. Let me look at, is it Matthew? Now, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name cast out demons, and in your name perform many miracles? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and acts upon them may be compared to a wise man who built his house upon the rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and burst against that house, and yet it did not fall, for it had been founded upon the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act upon them will be like a foolish man who built his house upon the sand, and the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and burst against that house, and it fell, and great was its fall. The difference between a wise man and a fool is the doing. God blesses the doer of the word. So when you assume and fulfill your circle of responsibility, there are blessings that God brings to your life. And that you can be truly sure of. And remember, you will only be held accountable for your circle of responsibility. In 2 Corinthians 5:10, it says, "For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may be recompensed or paid back for his deeds in the body, according to what he has done, whether good or whether bad." So there are benefits. It really does give you back your power if you fulfill your circle of responsibility. Now, you may have relationships that are broken, and the other person never fulfills his circle of responsibility. But you know what? You can still be okay. You can still be okay because God will be responsible for that. And if you try to pick up what doesn't belong to you, it never gets assigned to the right person. And we're going to kind of illustrate that with the circles of responsibility. I have three circles, and you may have to stand up so you can see. I have three circles, and I want Marcella to come and stand in this circle, and Linda's going to come and stand in this circle. Do we have somebody that's going to do the video? Okay. Okay. It's okay. Okay. And then I have God's circle. And in God's circle are those things that we talked about. His circle is to convict, control, give wisdom, and change. Just a minute. Okay. So we have, as long as these girls are in their circle and they're taking care of their responsibilities, there's no conflict. Isn't that nice? Staying in their circles and there's no clock. But what would happen if Marcella went over and got in Linda's circle? You'd have stuff. To put you can't take your stuff. Got to put your stuff down. Can't take care of your stuff. Get in that circle with her and start telling her how to deal with that baby. Yeah, you're being too.
No way. You're just too calm.
Okay, what do we have? Conflict. She can't take care of her responsibility, and she's sure as heck not taking care of Linda's, but she's making life miserable for everybody. Go away. Conflict, conflict. Okay, get back in your circle. But what if, this would be an appropriate thing, what if she said, I am so overwhelmed by what's going on. I can't take care of this baby. Could you help me? You know what the Bible says? She could lay her things down for a little while because the Bible says we're supposed to bear one another's burdens and help with each other's crushing overload. This is a crushing overload. So that would be appropriate, and God would give you the grace for that, wouldn't he? Okay, get back in your own circle. Okay. And vice versa. If she's over here, she's overwhelmed by the cooking. You know what the Bible says? The older women are supposed to be teaching the younger one. We know she's overwhelmed by the cooking. And what if the older women, if the older women are supposed to be teaching the younger women how to love their husbands and how to love their children and be keepers of the home? And so that would be appropriate. If Marcella asked her and wanted her to come and help her, that would be appropriate. But then what if Linda comes over there and says, I am going to tell you how to run your house, girlfriend. You are not doing it right. I am going to make you do it right, and I'm going to do it. She is in my face telling me what to do. What are you going to do, Marcy? Actually, she probably crumble and cry and say, okay.
I just feel guilty.
Yeah, just feel guilty. There you go. There's
right.
more. That's right. That's right. But you know what would happen if they're in this conflict, and the more mature person would say, what can we do about this conflict? And begin to use some of these things. They might lay down their things for a little while and sit with all of this mess in the middle of the floor.
That's okay.
What about the trying to lay it on her?
Well, that, yeah, you could lay it on her.
I just can't do that.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. She's drawing her in, because we could do that too, trying to get someone to assume our responsibility. Thank you. Reminding me of that. Yeah, she could draw Linda in and say, I am absolutely a mess. You get over here and you make this right, fix it up. I've got a friend that does that from time to time, and we have to kind of sort through it and say, no, wait a minute, this is your job. Anyway, so they've got this conflict going, so they sit down in the middle of the floor and they begin to sort out what belongs to who. That's the whole point.
Are you blue?
I'm blue.
Okay.
See, they're sorting it out. They're trying to decide. They're identifying and assigning.
This is mine. I don't want it.
Well, there's a lot in here that's not mine. And there's more of yours.
Bless you.
But the more mature Christian would be the one that would have to say, can we sort this?